Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and on 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you, and it's time now for our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco as we welcome in Fox 8's very own John Telich. JT, a pleasure as always to have you on the show, and we are finally able to talk about a football game that actually matters instead of discussing all these preseason games. JT, how are you?
I'm doing great, and it has been probably the longest off season that I can recall, and not the most painful because there's been plenty of those, but it's been the longest and probably the most anticipated regular season opener in quite some time.
Well, while the offseason hasn't exactly been painful, season openers have been quite the opposite. They've been very painful for Browns fans to endure over the last 20 years and change. You threw the record at me a little earlier today, and it's still just tough to grasp just how bad this team has been in season openers. But, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for the psychology of a game like this, whereas if you win it, you feel like you've certainly turned the tides just a bit and changed your luck. But if you lose, you know, certainly a lot of people are going to let that linger and think, oh boy, here we go again. So let's start with that. You know, what does a win do, or what does a loss do to the psychology of this team in the opener?
Well, I think if they lose, everybody except for those here in Northeast Ohio will be doing victory laps, because there's all these national pundits that, while they grudgingly say there's great talent in Berea, they want to see this team fail, and I don't know why, but they do. And so I think you'd have people saying, see, look what happens when you read your own press clippings and all this other arcane stuff. If they win, and I think they have the team to do it, and they're playing a team that they can beat, then you have a situation where, okay, it's a building block. Freddie said, this is a team that's going to come together during camp, find out what they're like in the first week of September, and you'll get validation that the system, the building of the players, the roster, what Dorsey and everybody has done is coming together, and there's something, if they, you know, don't lose their mind, there's something that could be pretty special here this year.
No doubt about it. Well, let's get into a unit that has certainly made us a little bit concerned heading into week one here. And the Browns made some trades over the last week, trying to add some more depth and some more talent to that offensive line. Does that unit concern you heading into the opener?
Well, I think it would concern you if the quarterback wasn't so good at making a decision and delivering the football rather quickly. And we saw that when Baker took over the reins a year ago. We saw it even more so halfway through the season when Freddie took over as the OC after Hugh was fired. The way the offense was set up, and I can't sit here and say it's going to be exactly the way that Freddie had it a year ago, because you have the, you know, downfield vision that a Todd Monken has, and so you're not really quite sure until Sunday afternoon. But I think with Baker being decisive and getting rid of the football, that's a great thing. They weren't happy with that right guard slot. You'll probably have Eric Kush start there this week just because you brought in the two new guys. It's tough to get everybody from zero to 100 miles an hour in, you know, 3 seconds is what they really want them to do. And it's kind of hard to do. But the guys that they brought in, all that I have heard, especially this Teller guy, Wyatt Teller, going to be a real good fit as the right guard for this football team. And so I think it's not a reason to panic. It wasn't a situation for this team that was locked down and ready to go some weeks ago, because even when they went with Kush over the other guys, you still didn't get great production per se. So I think this week with Baker, you know, in it full bore, game planning for Tennessee, I think you'll see the offense be pretty productive, and that offensive line just kind of be a work in progress there.
Safe to say that there's probably going to be a lot of three-receiver formations, and that's a unit, too, that certainly went through a bit of construction in the offseason. A trade was made recently to add another body to that room, which is already very talented. Let's take a look at that particular position. Okay. This is a unit that we all think, I think, can really flourish.
I really think it can. You know, that's what you're talking about with that 11 personnel setup where you have one running back, one tight end, and three wide receiver or three receivers. And so with OBJ, obviously an incredible upgrade from who would have been one of the top three receivers on the team a year ago, and with Hollywood and with Jarvis, that's a great setup. And you can look to the Rams being one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL with that 11 personnel when they've got the one tight end, the one running back, and the three receivers, and with Jared Goff running the show and McVay kind of orchestrating, being the marionette, if you will, and pulling the strings the right way. I think they have a unit that when they're in that kind of a formation with the three wide, that can be a very, very prolific. Nick Chubb and Gurley, very similar, outstanding backs that can go the distance. And then great wide receivers for Cleveland, enough speed. You've got guys that can separate. You have OBJ who never misses a pass. Same thing with Jarvis. And I think Hollywood's coming along as a pretty good player that's got great synergy with Baker. And then Njoku is just kind of like the not an odd man out. He's kind of like the wild card. He could come out and have a phenomenal game, and you'll say, wow, just keep throwing to the big guys some of those jump balls when you get near, you know, when you're in the red zone. So their 11 personnel, if they line up with that in a good chunk of snaps for the game, I think you got to look at them as one of the better units in the NFL with the ability to strike. And I would go with Baker Mayfield's decisiveness and ability to run his offense over Jared Goff doing the same type of a thing over there in Los Angeles. So, yeah, I think this wide receiver core, you're going to see the three guys play a lot. Yeah, some of the guys in the back of the roster are going to get snaps, but I think it's going to be emotionally dominated by the top three guys, barring injury, of course, and they'll get a lot of looks. And, gosh, you could play Jarvis, you know, in the slot, maybe OBJ in the slot once in a while, put people in motion. There's so many different things that they can do because these guys are really good receivers, and I think they're all unselfish. I think we've spoken about that before when we've discussed this. They'll be fine as far as guys getting the amount of touches and all that sort of stuff.
Do you think that receiving core helps in the decision-making of Baker Mayfield in the sense that he knows he's got guys who will come down with jump balls and things of that nature and allows him to let it fly a little more?
I think he will, and Baker does have a little – well, we know the Hall of Famer that people have been referring to him as a young, Brett Favre with that daring, sure, swashbuckler type of an approach to playing the game. Absolutely, I agree with you, Matt. I mean, that you've got talent that he knows he can fit it in a tight window. And, you know, OBJ, my gosh, I saw him catch more passes this summer at camp with one hand than he was with two. It's just phenomenal what you see. And so Baker's got great confidence in those guys. He's got incredible confidence in Hollywood. And, you know, Hollywood wasn't considered one of the upper echelon receivers a year ago. And so, yeah, put the ball out there. Give them the guys a chance to catch and get those yards after a catch and see what they can do with the football. So he's got many options. And, you know, we haven't even really discussed how they'll use, you know, maybe there's more of a package or more of a bet for, sneaking Nick Chubb out of the backfield and getting him some balls, you know, in space, as it were, and see what he can do. So there's a lot of ways they can go with this, with their offense. Really interesting to look at it.
Fox 8's John Telich joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. JT, let's get into the opponent on Sunday, the Tennessee Titans. Going to be very, very tough. Marcus Mariota, we all know how good he is. Now, it's going to be interesting on Sunday because he's without his top offensive tackle, who's out for a while. But they do have some interesting skill position players that could pose some problems. What concerns you most about the Titans on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, they have Corey Davis, who hasn't really blossomed quite yet, hasn't had that 1,000-yard season. He's, he was a top pick for them in 17. So this is year number three. This is the year to really blow up and see what you're all about. They've got some real good receivers, and obviously they got the big back in Henry. So there, and then what happens with Marcus? This is an interesting year for him now. You know, he can be a free agent. He has not been like some of these other young quarterback signed prior to the end of their deal. So, you know, he's out there to show what he can do. And, you know, there are some people that will say, what kind of an approach will they have this week against the Browns' defensive line? You mentioned, you know, their outstanding tackle not going to be able to play. Myles Garrett and Olivier Vernon, you know, and the rest of the defensive line having opportunities to go get Marcus Mariota and get him as much as they would like to. So how do they approach that? Do they, you know, do they do some more RPO than in the past? Do they not have, you know, deep drops for his passes? Do they get the ball out quickly? I'm sure they'll do things to try to combat the great defense that the Browns have on paper, and I'm sure we'll see actually play like that on Sunday.
Well, special teams certainly had gotten a lot of attention all throughout camp. How much do you worry about having a couple of rookies in the kicking game for the Browns?
Well, I think as long as your punter hangs out at the Flying Monkey, then everything's all good. And we're referring, of course, to Jamie Gillum. That's how he found out he made the Browns. He was hanging out at the Flying Monkey in Tremont on Saturday and got the phone call from Dorsey and company. But I'm joking. But, yeah, it's a bit of a gamble. There's so much potential in the leg, the strength of the leg of the Scottish Hammer. But you do lose that pinpoint punting ability that Colquitt had, who was able to pin people down deep in their territories and one of the best in the NFL at doing that. And then with Seibert, you're putting a lot of strength and a lot of emphasis on a rookie handling some really extreme kicks. But I will say what happened over the course of this camp where he started out shaky and then brought himself around, it was part and parcel to his work ethic, but I think a lot of it can also be spoken for how he was treated by their special teams coach and Mike Prefer, one of the best in the league, and Prefer has the ability to help people in that respect to up their games on the special team side of things, especially the specialists like the kickers and the punters. So I'm sure he's been a calming influence and a guy to bolster Austin Seibert and bolster him enough so that he was able to go out and win the job. But there is a bit of a, you know, there's a bit of a gamble when you've got rookies handling both of those jobs. But certainly, you know, they'll be selling T-shirts for the Scottish Hammer, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, I want to bring it back around to the offensive line here because, you know, Greg Robinson, of course, was released, but then re-signed very quickly. It was a paper move that got a little bit of attention. Well, why does this Greg Robinson contract signing indicate that these aren't the same old Browns?
Well, I think in the past you would have had the Browns, like, do you remember the scenario when they were trying to make a deal for A.J. McCarron and the paperwork never was, you know, sent to the league on time, the trade got nullified, and that looked to be a major snafu. Although I've been led to believe there were forces at work in the building to kind of keep that from happening because they knew it would ultimately not be a good move. But the bottom line is Dorsey had his plan. He knew he had to have Drew Forbes in a certain list in order to eventually be able to put him on the injured reserve list that allows him to return to the team. And in order to facilitate that, they had to remove Greg Robinson from the roster, waive him, giving him the assurances that he's coming right back. They did that, no muss, no fuss, and that's one reason, at least signals to me, that there's actual grown-ups doing those front office positions in Berea, and that came off without any kind of a hitch whatsoever.
Well, and of course, on Sunday, everybody very excited about the opener itself, but there's also a lot of anticipation and excitement for the Otto Graham statue to be unveiled also. This should be really, really cool.
It's great just that the names from the past are not just having their names, you know, the so-called wall of honor, ring of honor, and what have you, as far as Browns greats, but fans will be able to, you know, on a Sunday basis, week by week, to go by and to see the statue of Otto Graham. And if we have young listeners here and aren't really that familiar, this guy went to title games year after year, I think 9 straight years, from the old AAFC and also the National Football League, and all that guy did was win. And so you hear so much about Tom Brady in the Super Bowl era and Joe Montana, all great. Those Staubachs, great. You know, anyone that you want to name, Elway, whoever. Otto Graham was really the first, and it's just cool that Otto Graham and Marion Motley and these great players were part of the synergy and the beginnings of pro football here in Northeast Ohio with the Cleveland Browns, both in the AAFC and here on the NFL side of things. And it's just great that the Haslams, that the people here in Cleveland decided to honor Otto Graham and get his name out there. So people are more aware of the contributions he made to the Cleveland Browns way back when.
All right, JT, well, before we cut you loose, everybody's interested. Week 2, Friday night touchdown this Friday. Which games will you be following? Which games will you be covering on Friday night?
Well, we have a whole bunch of great games that we're excited about doing at Fox 8, but me personally, one of the games I'll be at, I'll speak to it, is the Mentor St. Ignatius game. That's at the JTO, the Osborne Stadium in Mentor. And as you guys all know, two of the top-rated matchups from last weekend, both Avon Lake, that was a one-point game, and then last week, St. Ed's and Mentor, that was a one-point game. So seeing in week 2, Ignatius taking on Mentor on Mentor's home turf, that's going to be a fun game to see. We know that Mentor was out of the state playing elsewhere last week. They're back here. We saw what Mentor can do with their skilled players that have been there for quite a while. Triv's final year as the head coach. It's going to be really interesting to see how that game goes. But there's a whole bunch of other games, obviously, and we're excited about doing them on Friday Night Touchdown. So we appreciate you guys watching on that, and we appreciate the fact that the coaches and the kids at these respective schools bust their butt each and every week to put on a good show for kids and people that like high school football.
Great stuff. JT, as always, my friend, an absolute pleasure. And next week, we will have a result to speak of as well. So should be a lot of fun here over the next 6 or 7 days. But as always, we appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, guys. You guys have a great week. Have some great games.
Thanks, John. You do the same again. That's Fox 8's John Telitz joining us on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We need to get to a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon, but Matt Douglas and I will come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and the new 100.3 FM.